Father, thank you this morning for our time, and thank you for blessing us with the freedoms that we have in this country to continue to assemble. We don't know how long we can expect that those freedoms will continue, but we thank you for every day that we have them. Thank you for our local church and for the the spirit that is here to want to study your word and to know it and to obey it, and help us to work toward that end this morning as we study this important topic. In Christ's name we pray, amen. Well, we are in the midst of looking at some handouts that I gave you from Michael Pearl's book. It's really most of chapter one of his book. And a book, you know, for the most part, as I've said before, I recommend. I really think it's one of the most practical books I think I've ever read on training kids. And I just came across it recently. I mean, I've known Herb Michael Pearl only because of his wife's book that my wife read a long time ago on being a helpmeet or whatever. But I never actually read any of his materials until just recently. When I did, I was pretty impressed with it. So I hope you'll find it helpful and you'll go out and get your own copy or whatever. But if not, you can enjoy this material anyways. So we're on page 2, printed front and back. Training the Ornery Amish Boy. And I think I mentioned last week, this is one of my favorites out of all these stories that we're going through. So he's reporting how he, apparently they live in an Amish community. They're not Amish themselves, but I think they fit in pretty well. And he's watching this Amish guy, who apparently speaks German. And he has a 12-month-old boy sitting in the father's lap. And the boy just decided he was tired of sitting in his dad's lap. He wanted to slither out and go to the floor and take off and do his own thing. Not an uncommon thing for a toddler that age. And the father directed him to stay in his lap. And the child continued to try to wiggle and squiggle and get out of his dad's lap. And his father, you know, gave him some strict words. Well, then the child saw the mother across the room. And what's the child do? Mommy, mommy, rescue me. Right? Again, very common in little kids. They will try to work one parent against the other. And especially, as a rule, there are exceptions. The mom tends to be the softy in the family. And maybe that was the case here. However, to the mom's credit, he says, mothers often run to their children in this situation because they crave the gratification of being needed. But this mother was more concerned that her child be properly trained than she was for satisfying her own sentiment. I thought that was a good observation on his part. And I thought it was a good commendation of the mom. Hard to do because the mom's seen the dad, no, not like that, but she knows it needs to be done. So the father took the child and turned him away from the mother. You're not looking at mom, you're not calling for help, you're going to sit here and do what I told you to do. And so during the following 45 minutes, I'm just skipping through here reading portions, I'm not going to read the whole article, hopefully you've read it. The child shifted his legs 15 times, trying to get back and look at his mom, and every time he got a slap from the dad saying no, and turned him back around. And I really like this statement. I think this is one we ought to have engraved maybe on a placard in our home as parents, because you got to remember this. He said, the father was as calm as a lazy port swing on a Sunday afternoon. There was no hastiness or anger in his response. He did not take the disobedience personally. That's a good thing for us to keep in mind as parents, because there's a tendency to take it personally. You know, you're disobeying me. And there's a tendency to get wound up, especially, how many times this father, he says, had to spank the kid's leg? There's a tendency to get exasperated. There's a tendency to feel like, this isn't working. You know, I'm tired of this. Quit that. And he said the father didn't do any of that. He just I love that description. As calm as a lazy port swing on a Sunday afternoon. Just relax. Wasn't caring the world about it. Just part of life. Nope. Put him up. Continue this conversation. And he attributes it to the fact that the Amish train animals all the time, including stubborn mules. And so he knew it just takes patience to train, to do any kind of training. whether it's kids or animals or what have you. So he says, in the end, the 12-month-old submitted his will to his father. Here's another thing to really note. Sad as he was placed, and became content, even cheerful. And remember, I've talked about the fact that in the end, kids really are happier when they are obedient. So even though that kid was struggling to get away and wanted his way and was fighting and put up quite a fight, it sounds like, he was happier in the end when he ended up submitting. And he said now his dad can sit quietly through a 3-hour boring church service and be able to sit there with him. He's got him trained. So it's great. All part of this idea that he has a training. And he anticipates some objections. He says, some will say I couldn't take it emotionally. And he said, sometimes it is difficult. But he said, but when we know it will work to the temporal and eternal good of a child, it's a joy instead of a sacrifice. So it's tough. It's not easy to do what this guy did. But it's worth it. It's worth it. And he says, if you're prone to anger or impatience, it will deter you from being aggressive and disciplining your child. You may fear your disciplines as an act of your ego to dominate. So he says you must first deal with your own impurities for the sake of the child. For if he doesn't receive consistent and forceful training, he will greatly suffer. And that's a very true statement. The child will suffer, you will suffer, the world will suffer as a result of your poor parenting. And so it's worth the sacrifice. It's worth encountering and facing the difficulty. So that's a rather lengthy summary. I almost could have read it to you faster than that, but I want to just make some comments. What are your thoughts on this? How did you all take this? You obviously can tell I like what he has to say. So, but you, as always, you're free to take issue with me or have your own perspectives. Yes.
I don't think it's. I don't normally discipline just because I'm offended, that he's disobeying, but it's hard to not whenever he does something that's inconvenient for me.
Like, yeah.
Finally got one leg through a pants, and then trying to get the other one, he kicks out. That is hard not to spank because of that, but it's either you spank him because he's kicking, or you spank him because he's being disobedient, not because he just ruined your work.
So. Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's all a matter of principle. And that's hard to do. You're right. I mean, it's emotionally, we want to react. We're human. But you've got to do it for your sake and for the sake of a child, especially. Any other thoughts on this article? Did y'all like it? Did y'all think it? That's the way it ought to be done?
Tried to do it more like this instead of we were always trying to give him something to keep him occupied.
Yeah.
We still have something that gives him something to do, but I would come with a whole bag full and I would just rotate out to give him something instead of and again I wish I had read this because I feel like of all of the kind of church settings that would have been a perfect one to that nobody cared about the noise. But I feel like, and not that anybody would be really offended here, but there's that, I guess that in a setting like this, you don't want to distract. And so where's the line in, if I take him out, I'm teaching him that I'm going to take him out.
Right.
But if I don't, then, the people within 5 rows might not hear anything, so.
Right.
So in a public setting, how do you train that? Because it's going to be different. I mean, you could try to train it to an extent of teaching them to sit still for so long. And I mean, I know with Jaden, we would even put a church service on the TV and we would practice just kind of sitting in the living room.
Right.
But still, it's different because, we're not sitting in a normal church seat. And what are your thoughts on training them in a public situation?
Yeah. Well, I have one thought, and I'll open it up to see if others want to put in their own ideas or whatever. One observation that comes to mind, I think it's a very good question, because that is our big challenge, really, as a rule, training in public is not the place you want to, that's not where you want to do your training, actually. You want to do your training when it's not in public. And I understand what you're saying. Sometimes it's not quite the same, so they will sometimes challenge you in the public setting, and you may have to respond a little differently. It's not often very practical for us. In fact, I would strongly advise you against it, especially out in the, like a Walmart or someplace like that. There are people now, I mean, back in my day, we used to come out and applaud when parents finally got around to spanking their kids. That doesn't happen anymore as a rule. As a rule now, it's like they're on their cell phones calling scan. You know, they're going to report you. They're going to turn you in. And so we have to deal with the pragmatic realities in public. Of course, you're talking about a church setting where there would probably be obviously more sympathy. But what he's doing here is sort of, I see it as sort of a semi-public setting. So it's not as disruptive as where you're going to disturb a church service and a sermon. He's just sitting there on the front porch or whatever, having a conversation. The most it will disturb is one or two people on the porch having a conversation. But it provides an audience. And again, he's doing it at his convenience. That's what I love about all the examples that he gives us, and he makes a point about it, that put it at your convenience. Don't wait until the kid pick. Don't let the kid pick a time. Of course they'll pick a time. They'll pick your worst time because they figure that's when they're going to get an advantage over you. You pick a time that's extremely convenient for you. You're going to set apart that time. You've got nothing to do today or for the next 2 hours, but sit down with that kid and just very patiently and calmly train them. And it's in a situation where you can't hurt anything at all. You're not disrupting other people. You're not disrupting your schedule. You're not doing anything else. It's just totally dedicated to training the kid. That is a great idea. It's a great idea. So I think if that answers it in part, maybe. And if others, anybody want to comment on that? Because that is a very good question she's asking.
Because he kind of, I've read several of his books, and the disclaimer with him is that after you've read him a lot, and especially like his newsletter where moms would write in, and you know, he had a tendency to always blast the parents, you know, and so you come up with this idea of, okay, if you're perfect, your kids will be perfect, and the idea of once and you're done, and I didn't find that to be true, that okay, once I train them to submit, okay, they're always in every circumstance forever going to submit.
Sure.
And you can be training all day at home, and still at church they're going to act up. I mean, that's what I have found, but I'm not the perfect parent, obviously.
It's all your fault, Nancy.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, I'm just telling you, there's a lot of good things to glean from that, but I'm just warning you, if you do a lot of his reading, yeah, you got to be thick-skinned.
It's not that simple.
Yeah.
You might read that and say, yeah, I mean, he says, you know, from now on he's trained for a 3-hour church service, and in principle I think that's what he's getting at. But yeah, one event on the front porch probably wasn't all it took. But at the same time, again, if you set up a lot of times and you do this fairly often, it goes easier, and you do have success. And you will have those public settings, and you have to figure out a kind of a plan B for a public setting. And it may be taking them out, or it may be, even though maybe you'd be saying, and you're right, you know, I hate to do that because that teaches them, they can make me get out of the service. But sometimes, you know, you're sort of faced with a difficult choice. You just got to do the best you can. We face that in life all the time, right? You have two choices. You don't like either choice. Well, you got to pick one of them. At least we're facing that in the election right now, by the way, as you know. But anyhow, so yeah, in that kind of situation, you may have to have a plan B that you don't like. That's why you make the other time where it is going to work out easier and is to your convenience and so forth. Yes?
I tend to think, too, that one of the things I got out of this, and I know it to be true of my life, is that when you plan something, it keeps the irritation and the anger out of it altogether.
Mm.
Because you're already planned.
Yep.
For the time, it's set aside for a particular purpose. It's not upset by things that you don't plan on, what have you. So spur of the moment things don't happen in this case.
Yeah.
So I would tend to think, not a bad idea.
Yeah, that's the big advantage of planning. And again, there are going to be those times when you couldn't plan on it, and they are going to pull it on you. You know they will. So we're not saying this is just happy life. You know, you do one training session and all is well. Mm-hmm. But if you have if you set those times up and you know where your problems are, and you're working on those, you will have a lot less of the other unexpected times. They'll go much quicker when they do, because they know you mean business. You've already taught them that in the training session. And so you've got it kind of built in to their mindset. You know, when mom or dad says this, they mean it. I'm not going to try this. We've been there, done that. This is, you know, I know where that goes. You want them to develop that mentality. Doesn't happen overnight, but the training sessions, as you say, it's just, I love the idea of by making it convenient, you can be on your best game instead of being caught off guard. So.
And I wish I had that attitude at home. I mean, because you're at home a lot more, but without planning, I wish I had that attitude of when something came up to go, oh boy, goody, here's an opportunity to train, instead of, ooh. So if I looked at it in that time frame of, okay, this is perfect. We're home, he's acting up, we'll train.
Yeah.
And that would have been a lot better.
It's like any attitudes in the Christian life. I mean, there are things we know we should be thinking, and you know, it helps to know, first of all, that is a good attitude to have, so maybe you can work on it. That's a start, understanding what you need to do, and then hopefully have it happen. Oh, I'm sorry. Amy had her hand up. Let me call her, and then we'll catch you, okay? Go ahead, Amy. Yeah.
And to many of us, we say, oh, just a baby, they won't know better. I think even in some other parts of the book, he started even at 5, 6 months, that training, that instilling in them what no means and how to start teaching them the self-control. But that goes completely contrary to today's thinking. That's just, oh no, they don't know any better. They can't. And so you've set the bar of expectation really, really low. If you do that, that's all they're going to ever reach. So to me, in my mind, when I see that, the two things that stood out was, one, the age, that start as early as possible, and then two, the attitude behind it, and how that convicts me of staying calm. And that the point is, the parent is right, the parent's going to win, you know, they are right, the child will submit. And going into that mentality of, I will win. You will not, override me on this. But the only way you can have that is being able to control your own emotions, your own anger, and
right.
Have that patience, that mental. It's a mental game. But I enjoy hearing that story again, because it reinstills. Okay, if a parent can do this the right way, so much can be done.
Yeah, and he makes the point even that starting at a young age, it becomes, the earlier you start, the easier it is. Because once you've allowed them to develop bad habits and get down that road, the farther down that road they get, the harder it becomes to pull them out of it. And there actually can get to be a point many years later when it may not be possible to pull them out of it, at least fully. I'm talking teenage or something. So the earlier the better. And yeah, you're right, it goes contrary utterly to our current culture. Of course, it's interesting. You said, you know, our culture would think, well, they don't know what they're doing, or they're not accountable. He actually holds to a belief, I disagree with him on it, they're below the age of accountability. So he said, well, it's just training. And he just calls it training. You know, so he still does it, is the point. He does the right thing, even though I wouldn't agree with his theology that he expressed. That's the only part of the book I disagree with. But even with believing that, he said, you still need to train them, just like you need to train a... Again, not calling your kid a dog or something, but just like you need to train an animal or a dog or whatever, you need to train your kids, even if they're really, really young. Earlier the better. Tell them.
What he calls training still parallels discipline. You don't expect to spank a child for one infraction and then they're never going to have that infraction again, or, oh man, the spanking just isn't working. You know, we still come back to the fact that if you stick at it, the training and the discipline, that, you know, ideally later down the road, you're going to have less instances, because they are eventually growing and learning. And, training takes place later. It's not just a one-time thing, and then they've got it down.
And if you do find yourself in the place where it's not going like this, like we're sitting here saying all this in class and it's going to go well, and we're acknowledging, as Nancy said, it doesn't happen on one try, but we're still saying, as you just said, that over time it becomes easier, especially the earlier you start and all that kind of stuff. If you find yourself not having that go on in your discipline? Like you say, I'm trying this stuff and it's not working, or it doesn't seem to be working. Don't throw your hands up and give up, please. What I would encourage you to do is get with someone, maybe older or wiser, or maybe just a peer that you trust, and ask them to be brutally honest with you, and someone who wouldn't have knowledge, somebody in the church maybe, or whatever, and say, would you be honest with me? What do you think is going on here? I'm trying this. It doesn't seem to be working. Do you see anything that I could change that might be helpful? And get them to help you and engage, because sometimes it can be just the littlest thing, or it might be something in your demeanor. It might be something that you're doing you don't even realize. We do things all the time we don't even realize we're doing in every area of life. And sometimes it takes an outside person to speak to that. So that's what I would say. I would say, please don't get in that situation and say, well, I don't know, doesn't work for me. Because that can happen. That can happen to you. And I don't want to see anybody get stuck in that frustrating situation and think this doesn't work. It does work, but you just have to figure out what's going on. Tim, you had a...
So we know we've got to guard against anger.
Yes.
Do we need to guard against apathy? Being too soft and so, you know, easygoing that, oh, it's okay, it's not a big deal. I mean, it is a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
You speak towards the balance.
Yeah, I mean, you're almost asking a rhetorical question, but yeah, it's absolutely, it's, you know, on one hand, what happens is, here's what happened with apathy. Nobody can stay apathetic, because eventually the kid escalates. And, you know, I think my wife would tell you that she was kind of raised this way. Her mom was not a Christian. She was raised by a single parent mom back in the day when it wasn't quite as common as it is today. And she said her mom would just let things go and didn't want to deal with issues. And then finally, her mom would get so mad, she'd just kind of blow up. And, you know, everybody kind of react to the blow up, and then it would all settle down, and then we'd back to square one, and this bad cycle. So you really can't even stay apathetic. But people who are just going to give up or just say, I'm just not going to deal with it, or whatever reason, yeah, that's really not an option biblically. The Bible holds us accountable. And we see that, you know, we've already gone through those passages. So we have a responsibility here as parents, and it's a very important responsibility. And all the more in our society today when so much is working against us, we have to work harder. We have to work harder. Does that address it? Okay.
And I didn't even consider the fact that you can't ultimately stay.
Right. You shouldn't.
We'll get out of control.
I'm just knowing people are people and humans are humans, and I'm just anticipating that react. I could see that happening. Sarah?
I'm glad, Nancy's already said, I guess not having an expectation that something is going to work immediately. And I think I have really struggled with that because Tabor was a biter and sometimes circles back in and out of it. But as a kid, my mom said, yeah, you bit me once and I bit you back and you never did it again. And so it's well, golly, that should have worked for me. But here I have this kid who'll just go and bite anyone in a nursery.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't black, white, brown, doesn't matter, boy, girl, he'll just pick a kid and go bite him. And so it's I had this expectation of, oh, my kids, I'm going to do something one time, and then he's going to be trained forever not to bite, and that didn't happen, and it was so frustrating, and, here I am, three kids in, so to all you moms with one, try not to have an expectation that something will work one time. It really is every day getting at it and, you know, figuring out the things that do work and, you know, sticking with that discipline. And so it is very hard, but
yeah, that's so I'm glad you made that point, Nancy, because that'll our expectations affect us a lot. I've talked about this before, you know, and I've shared with you one of my wife's and I's expressions around the house is lower your expectations. Notice we're not saying lower your standards. There's a difference. The standards remain what they are. The Bible says what it says, or whatever our household rules are, they are what they are. But you don't go into a situation thinking all's going to be rosy, all's going to go well. That sets you up for huge disappointment, and it can be overwhelming. So you've got to go into it saying, look, this is going to take a while, and I've got time. You know, I've got time. So that's not a problem. You know, yeah, we wish it didn't happen, and maybe you go into it and it goes, if it goes better than you expected, well, we should all have that problem. But far better to go in expecting the worst and get something better than to go in expecting everything's going to be smooth sailing and run into an obstacle and it just shatters you, shatters your hope, shatters your dreams. So, yeah, good point.
Sorry, my mind's spinning, so I don't think it's going to come out clear. One thing I wanted to mention is the key to this whole article or chapter is being proactive and not reactive.
Yes.
So basically, you have to set your goal. So, like when Brian started crawling, I remember thinking, I want my goal to be, he always comes when I ask him to. Or a goal to, he does sit in my lap well, or whatever. That makes my goal, so mm-hmm. I know what to train him in. So I think that's the first step, is to think what you want your kid to do. And then that's where it's discretion on. Some people may not want their kid to sit in their lap. That may not be a requirement for them. Whereas another may, like for me, I want him to be able to sit in his car seat content. So everyone can have different standards. There's variety within that, and different strict and lenience in that. But within it, there needs to be absolute obedience. And so I wanted to mention with Brian, when he started crawling between 6 and 9 months, he would come perfectly. I got it to a point where I just tell him once and he'd come. Mm. But as he's developed and sees toys more, life's more than about me and him crawling.
Right.
It's other things. And I feel like I'm starting from square one again. So I found the key to be daily have a training session. We practice come every stinking day.
Every stinking day.
I mean, because the first time he sat in my lap, he screamed an hour. And by the end of it, I hugged him. I left and cried. It was horrible. And then he's also getting to the point now that he's a year. And it's like what Amy said. It's a crazy amount of, they understand so much more than we think. He acts as like the other toddler cousins. And I think, how do I, he already has an attitude. He already will do, nyeh, after I told him no. I just like, what, you're one? But anyway. And I even started noticing the sessions are getting longer and longer. Something's off. Is my spanking not working anymore? And then we went and got a little rod, and it felt so weird to spank a one-year-old with a rod. It was really hard, but boy, he obeys now, like, okay, you know, and so basically just really figuring out, don't just give up because the spanking's not working, or Brian's a little bit more of a strong little child. He may, with the rod, still go an hour of screaming, who knows, but the point is, in the end, it really does pay off. It is so nice to go to a restaurant, and he'll sit there happily. Well, he's working through another phase of that, but anyway, basically, just because you have it down, he's not like a dog and will forever come. You have to stay on top of it over and over, and I don't know how moms with multiple kids do it, but...
you're right, it's an ongoing thing. I mean, it's... and. You know, you're to be commended for persevering, and I know that's hard to do. And you brought up some really good things. That sometimes when circumstances change or age changes, you know, you have to cycle back through some of these things. But that's the way we learn in life, right? Have you ever learned something in life? You've mastered some area of sin in your life, and so you go for a month and don't, whatever it is you're doing, commit that sin or have that problem. And you think, yay, I'm in the clear. And then you let your guard down, and some unusual situation comes up, or maybe some old situation, and suddenly you had let your guard down that day. What happens? Fall right back into it. Your kids are no different, you know. So yeah, you're gonna have to. And you know, here was a case where it wasn't working, and you figured out that apparently it wasn't hurting enough, because whenever the pain level was increased, results came about. And I've seen that happen numerous times. I know there was a situation where my wife was teaching in a private school with some other folks in a church school, and it was back at a time when you could do discipline in a private school setting. And I think the whatever it was they were using, I don't remember all the details, but the paddling that they were doing wasn't really hurting the kids, wasn't really stinging. And the principal came in, and he was a parent himself, and he said, I think we need to change what we're using to discipline the kids. And he got a better tool, whatever it was, for spanking. And man alive, you know, it changed overnight the entire school. went from being just habitually disobedient and chaotic and out of control to being, you know, obedient. And they were like, yes, yes, ma'am, yes, sir. So it could be something like that. It could be the tool. It can be something about your ad. There are a lot of things that can make spanking not seem to work. And that's where sometimes we need some help, or sometimes we just need to get think hard about it, or get with our spouse or whatever, and try to figure out what's going on. So, all right, well, let me, if we can, let's look at two more examples on the back. Now, of all the ones that he provides us, most of them were positive examples where there was success and where he was doing what he thought was the right thing or somebody else was. Here he provides us with two negative examples, something not to do. And that's a good part. That's a good way to learn. You should always learn what you should do and also learn what you should not do. So here's what we should not do. Number one, he talks about purchased compliance. He said, one father proudly told of how he fearlessly overcame by promising the child ice cream if he would only wait until they left the store. Such compromises will only affirm a child in his commitment to terrorist tactics. That's a pretty strong statement, but I understand where he's going. I really agree with him. You are not gaining control of a child. He is gaining control of you. Parents who purchase compliance through promise of reward are turning their child into a racketeer paying for protection. Again, strong language. Maybe you think he overdid it, but he makes a great point. And he says, if you're training up a child, you need to reconsider your methods if you're doing it that way. You know, giving the kid a reward or a promise or something like that, here's the seductive nature of that approach with kids. At first, it seems to work. So it's like, you know, I've never been a drug addict, but I've watched people go through the pattern of drug addiction. People don't start taking drugs because it feels horrible from the very first day. In fact, it's the opposite. People take drugs because their first experience with the drug makes them feel good and they want more of it. So at first it seems like there's no harm. No harm, no foul, right? Later, they get entrapped in the pattern and it's too late. Well, it's the same thing with giving your, offering your kids rewards or treats or something to behave. It'll probably work for a little bit, not very long. And you will have actually trained, they'll actually have trained you. And you will end up, you won't be able to raise the stakes. You won't be able to pay them enough. And it's not the biblical way. The Bible says discipline. So, and again, it's not to say you can't be kind to your child and say, you know, I really appreciate the way you've been today and give them a treat or something. But to bribe them, that's another whole deal. So that's kind of what this is. Yeah.
What would you say to rewarding your child for an action? And that's what you're wanting them to do. So it essentially is a bribe in the beginning. But once they've learned what you're wanting them to do, after they don't, you know, you stop the treat or whatever, and then once they start, if they don't obey to come or whatever, then it's spank.
Yeah. Yeah.
But is that different, or is it, no, you should never use a reward to, because, I mean, I know for potty training, that's exactly what we did with Liam. It was, oh, you beat me to the potty, like, you get an M&M or whatever. And then it became, okay, you had an accident, now you're getting a spank once you're, because you know better now.
Yeah.
So, is that different? Or?
Yeah, I think, and this is kind of a distinction I made in doing it, and y'all, again, I would invite y'all's comments on this, because this is a good issue for us to explore. In terms of offering rewards, I always gave the reward after the fact, mm-hmm. not as a promise before the fact, or not, or even like, you know, now if you're real good, when we go over so-and-so's house, when we come home, we're going to have a special little treat. I don't even like that. But you go over so-and-so's house, and then you come, and they really are well-behaved because of your training. Then you come home from so-and-so's house, and you say, you know what, I am really proud of the way you guys behaved today at Mr. and Mrs. Jones' house, and we're going to celebrate. Let's have ice cream or whatever we're going to do. So I like that approach myself. That way there's no, it can't be construed as a bribe or racketeering of any kind. And yet you can be kind and have a great time with your kids. So it kind of gives you the best of both worlds. That's how I approached it. Anybody have thoughts on that?
I'm not convinced. I think that, you know, in the Bible, we have not the only motivation. for living right to smile, but
yeah.
Crowns, there's reward. Now, obviously, we cast those as Jesus' feet, glory returns to glory. So there's a whole theological package here. But on a smaller scale, we know that with privilege there is, or with responsibility there's privilege there's responsibility. So understanding that a certain form of behavior will reap good things.
Yeah, you reap what you sow.
And so you want to lay the groundwork of explanation of this is how the world works. There's consequences for the disobedience, but there's reward.
That's absolutely.
So.
Yeah, but that's.
I'm not sure how that.
How that fits in with
that
this.
Important principle works.
Yeah, even there, I still wouldn't see it as in bribery territory, because and when it does get there, I think a lot of Christians make this mistake. They think that their obedience sort of obligates God to reward them. A lot of Christians think that way. They think, you know, hey, I was well behaved today. I've been avoiding X, Y, and Z. You know, all these problems I have in my life. And now you've brought this problem in my life, God. What's with that? You know, and maybe they're ever honest in their prayer life. We don't want to develop a mentality where I do good and therefore you owe me God kind of thing. But at the same time,
maybe an example is there's a movie, Daddy Daycare, where this kid gets in the habit of throwing a tantrum, and the father figure, in order to get him to stop, pays him $1 to get him to quiet down. Now that's obviously bad news.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
Because every day he's asking for $1.
Yeah, next day it's $2 and then $10.
Right.
And
or the child has trained you in
right.
getting what he wants. So a definite balance.
But, you know, at the same time, you want to teach your kids, hey, if you're a hard worker and you get out and get a good job, you'll have money. You reap what you sow. Or if you make a mess of your life, then you're going to reap the consequences down the road, you know. And you want to teach the reap and sow principle, which is one of the ideas I think you're alluding to. But we just want to make sure that we don't get into bribery territory where it's a kid pulls the lever or, you know, gets the reward kind of thing. That's what we want to kind of avoid. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I think there's definitely times where, you know, I was thinking, hey, you've been going potty every day in the potty for such and such days, and you've done a great job with that. Here's a book, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
Because it is giving them a reward, but it's not that they're demanding it. You know, it's a, I'm freely giving this to you because you're doing, you know, what you're supposed to be doing. And that
right.
type of thing. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I say I like that myself. Yeah. Pardon?
I was just going to say that to me the difference is in the parent. One is setting up the parameters she was talking about and saying, okay, this is what's going to happen and this is the reward if that's, you know, set it up. But the parent is the one in charge and the kid knows it. The other case is always the reactive of just panic to do whatever to get the kid quiet. And so one is saying, I'm going to reward you for doing right. The other is going to say, I'll reward you if you'll stop doing wrong.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So there's a, you know, it's just the difference in who's the parent and who's the kid. And that's what they're saying. Don't let the kid turn into the parent.
Right.
And I have seen that, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. one more example here. Let's see, yeah. So we'll be the last one we have time for, and we'll be done with our handout, and we'll be ready to jump back into new material next week on overheads material. This is titled, Did You Hear What I Said? And this is a tragic situation. He observes a father with a small boy, and he tells him not to touch a particular object. And having been trained to ignore mild commands, the kid picks it up anyways. And then the father starts saying, did you hear me? And he says, of course he did. And he yells louder. And throughout this whole process, the kid is making the father jump through the hoops to get him to obey. And he gets down to a point, I won't read the whole thing, but he says, so even at the end, instead of, you know, when the father really has gotten really wound up and yelled and even embarrassed himself, then the kid realizes, okay, we're about at the end of how far I'm going to get away with it. But he has to throw in one more thing. He says, instead of handing the object to the humbled, groping father, he held it in his gentle direction but down close to his body, forcing the father to advance even further to retrieve it. The father, looking like a poor peasant, receiving alms, poetic description here, receiving alms from some condescending member of royalty, submitted to the child's humiliation, reached to retrieve the object, and then in display of weakness, the father placed it out of the child's reach, which he says, no, don't put it out of their reach. Make them not reach for it. So he says, what did Johnny learn from the episode? He had his conviction reinforced that it's never necessary to obey the first, second, third, or even fourth time. No one expects him to. And he's learned not to respect authority. He learned that the only thing that matters is strength, and one day he's going to be the stronger one. What did Dad learn? He learned Johnny is just a strong-willed child, and he has to watch the kid every minute to keep things out of his reach. That's the only thing that kids understand are force and anger. So they both learned a really bad lesson in this whole tragic circumstance. He said the father is reaping nothing less than the harvest of his failure to train. So having shown you what he believes is the right way and giving you some good examples, now he's showing you here's the alternative. Anybody want that? So thoughts on this one?
I think for us, we are sort of battling this right now because we did really, not cheating our own horn, but we did fairly well with Zoe, training her to obey the first time when she was younger, but now as she's developing a lot more of a strong personality,
yep,
we've become a little bit more complacent because we've already taught her that. She knows,
yeah,
you know? And so right now we're having to regroup and remember, okay, if she doesn't do it the first time, she gets disciplined immediately and not after I told her 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 times, you know,
yep,
to do something. And so we are right in the throes of that, just really trying to get control back because we have been complacent and allowed her to just kind of do what she wanted to do because we've taken it for granted that we've already trained her in that.
Right. And that's really just kind of like what, yeah, the Linda Beth example,
yeah,
at a slightly different age. It's easy to do, and again, it's very human, everyday life. Even in areas where we think we've got things under control, later we find out, well, you did, but we're back. And so you have to be ready to jump back into gear. And sometimes it catches you off guard. Don't despair. Don't beat yourself up. Just, regather your thoughts and regather your forces and head back into battle. You've done it before. You've won before. You know you can do it again. It just takes time. So, yeah, that's a good reminder.
That one, assume they always hear. As heartless as that sounds, because I don't want today's to be sound like just constantly beat your kid and you're the boss and just make them feel worthless. That's not the point. It's you want the children to be peaceful and love life themselves and love being with the parents and with other people instead of just being little terrors. I'm losing my train of thought. But the first, with Brian, I wanted him to come. It's been really tricky if he's going off to another room.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm at the stove and I don't know, oh dear, where is he and I'm not watching him. I've been training him to come by me saying, Brian, come here. And it's really hard for me to assume, what if he didn't hear? But boy, if I get that switch one time and go back, he comes every time because,
yeah,
he knows that the dread's coming. I've just been surprised how much he really can hear. And
right.
I, before, was giving him a lot of chances, and he would never come.
Sure.
So when I just thought, okay, I'm going to start doing it the first time and see what happens. Oh, he listens now. So
yeah,
throw that out there.
Yeah, that's a good thing to throw out there. That is a tricky business with parents sometimes because your kids will sometimes, one of their strategies is to feign some kind of, I didn't hear it or I didn't know that or I didn't, blah, blah, blah. And sometimes there could be an element of truth. You're thinking, well, maybe you give them the benefit of the doubt. But eventually, as you've discovered,
And you're calm.
Yeah, always.
By the end of it, my switch is just once and it's done. And the rest of the day, it's more peaceful. It's
right.
Not this. You didn't listen to me. So.
Yeah, yeah. Amy.
It would have to go back to the training. That whole purpose of training is you're training your child to hear your voice. And I don't know if Pearl says it or another book we read talked about that if they use the excuse when they're older of, oh, I didn't hear you, and you say, okay, well, I have to spank you because you didn't hear me.
Ted Tripp.
Yeah.
It was Ted Tripp, okay. That the training is, you listen. That even if I say in a soft voice, a medium voice, in the other room, training them to always be listening for your voice, listening
yeah.
for those instructions, that when you say something, they jump, they immediately do it. That would be the goal. And
yeah.
so they can never fall back on, well, I didn't hear you, I didn't know.
Right.
Well, then, you know, it's kind of, it seems comical, but it would be, well, then I have to spank you because you weren't listening.
Yeah, I got you. All right. Well, I think we've got to the end of our time, so we'll pick up next week. We've got some more material to get into, and I'm looking forward to that. So I hope you all can be here for that. Father, thank you for this time, for this very practical discussion. Thank you for the good advice. Thank you for the even hearing from the different parents. We're hearing from folks on the front lines, and we're hearing of their experiences, their difficulties, their successes, and we just thank you for this whole process where you are training all of us. You're working in this community to become better parents and to honor you in that way. This is an important part of our life, and we thank you for the privilege. In Christ's name we pray, amen. Dismissed.